ungenerous.
And then, yeah, this is just when in the Stevens for this 35. Well,
did you say you do or don't want to?
I don't think I want to. You tell me. It's okay.
Think about it.
I scroll it so you can hide some of it. So, I don't know. Really think
this one was
readable.
Right.
I mean, I think
it's readable though.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, for the IAM, this may not be a very sexy talk, extent of fundraising, not PowerPoint. yeah, I'd like to thank the organizers for allowing me to talk. This was an open spot, especially to Robin, that he considered my results of being somehow interesting. So, well, I mean, I didn't have that much time to prepare the whole thing, but that's basically why it's great. So my name is Rolando Soma. I'm here, postdoc here at the Rimmer Institute, for those that don't know me. I mean, I think we pretty much understand what the motivations of doing tomography, efficient tomography, are. Full state tomography takes in general exponential time or polynomial time in the dimension of the field of space. We won't avoid that. I will show that for some special cases, we can actually do tomography in polynomial time. And I will explain what tomography in this case means. Of course, if we want to learn everything, all the state that will take exponential time. But the ideas of tomography in this talk do not differ from the ideas that you were having in mind, just performing a few set of measurements and trying to predict some other properties based on those measurements. So that's where I will go. So I will show that the performing tomography of generalized coherent states is an example where we can do, we can estimate these properties in polynomial time. And for that, I need to introduce what the, I need to define the generalized coherent states. So, I asked yesterday Banan, we were talking about this, I asked him if he knew what the generalized coherent states were, and he said yes, and those are states are like this, and basically that's true, but for the spin case. So I will explain better what that means. So I need to introduce some concepts of the algebras, are very simple, so don't get scared if you don't know very much about this stuff. I try to keep it at a very simple level. And for those of you that have just little knowledge, it's good to have the example of SU2, the angular momentum operators, in mind, because those are, that case is a special case of what I'm going to talk about now. So first, let's consider a set, finite set of observables, okay? I mean, defined by observables O1 to Om, so they are observables, and these observables act on some finite dimensional field of space, they take states from that field of space to states in that field of space as well. So you can think of these observables as big matrices, D times D dimensional matrices, where D is the dimension of the field of space. And I will need to impose some conditions on H, the algebra generated by these observables, that in fact will have to be a semi-simple algebra. I mean, you can forget about semi-simple, the part of the algebra is simple to see what it is. So by the algebra it means that whenever you commute any of those two observables, okay, I stay in the same algebra basically. I mean the commutation relations are closed. That's what I mean by the algebra. and these coefficients here coming from the commutation defined are the so-called structure factors or whatever you want to call it, from the algebra, and they define the general representation of the algebra. Okay? The general representation of the algebra is basically assigning to each of those big matrices, okay, another one that satisfies the commutational relations. Okay? So the point is that the algebra representation, the dimension of the algebra representation, depends only on the dimension of the algebra and not on the Hilbert space dimension. Okay? So before, we have m observables, okay? Now the matrices are m times m dimensional. Yes.
So would it be more proper to say that, H there,
there is
as
an
defined?
I somewhere I'm missing.
So
there is an I missing somewhere.
So H on the previous page is actually a representation because you've given me operators.
This is a generator set.
Yeah, so that's a representation of those O's form a representation of this algebra.
Yes. But because I'm in finite dimension, you can consider this. Yeah, as a big, there is a bigger representation, okay, the one for the Hilbert space, and there is a, if n, this n here is much smaller than the big, than the d, okay, this representation here is much smaller, so much smaller matrices, okay, and this satisfies the same commutation relations. So, what it will be important in the results that I will tell, I mean, is the dimension that is most relevant for the results that I will show is the dimension of the algebra, another dimension of the Hilbert space itself. Okay? Because we can always work, I will show that we can always reduce all the problems of estimation, etc., to work with some smaller matrices, okay, instead of the big ones from the general representation. I will, yes.
But for example, if you take SU2, right?
Yes.
Dimension of the adjoint representation is 3.
Yeah,
but the faithful is 2. So
it works. Okay. You can think if you want the fundamental representation, you are good to go.
Probably. If you go to SUD, it's much more convenient to get the fundamental.
I agree. Yeah. So, but the general representation at least, you know, is something. I'm not going to lose anything by saying.
So if a smaller irref exists, this would get even better.
If if a smaller representation exists, go to that one.
But
as long as it
exists,
is faithful, right? And by faithful, I mean that there is one, basically, for each linearly independent generator, there is a linear independent generator in the smaller representation.
So
okay?
If we started with the J equals 100 representation,
yeah,
of SU2, this would be an improvement.
Yes. So, yeah, in the C2, I mean, the J is 3 by 3, the fundamental is 2 by 2, the power of the curves, right? So you can go to that. I will put one more condition on the operators that basically, that's why I mean the algebra to me is semi-simple. That basically, I mean, when I take the general representation, for example, or any other one, when I compute the trace of the product of those, of any of those two matrices, those are just a delta of jk, so that means that those matrices are orthogonal. Okay? In SU2, take poly operator sigma x, y, and z. Maybe you have to divide by 2, I guess, or something like that. And you satisfy this condition. Okay? So those operators are orthogonal. I think they say it's orthogonal. Okay. So, good. So, I think we understand what the representation of the algebra is. Smaller matrices, they satisfy the same condition. Computational relations, and I will consider again that the representation is fake. For each operator, there is one smaller matrix, and those are linear.
So semi-simple means what?
Well, semi-simple implies this.
Okay, but it's equivalent, or no, implies.
I think it's equivalent to this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's equivalent. Yeah, when the dimension is finite, I think it's equivalent. Okay, one more thing. So before, I mean, these were the generators, right? I wrote both things, observables, the orthogonal, because it's a defined. But now I can write the algebra in some other basis, which is called the Cartan-Weyl basis, okay? Cartan-Weyl basis is basically decomposing the algebra into two sets of operators. One set is the Cartan subalgebra, the largest set of operators that commute in the algebra, okay? You can always do this with this particular algebra. So there is a larger set of commutative operators in algebra, that is the Cartan subalgebra. And then the rest of this set of operators are so-called raising E plus I and lowering operators, okay? In SU2, is JZ, J plus, J minus, okay? So I hope you follow me. Is it okay, Robin, you are looking like it?
Mm-hmm. Sure, draw, okay. Maybe draw the root diagram for SU2.
Okay.
J plus and J minus would be your.
Yes.
And J naught would be your cardinal.
Yes.
So yeah. What's an example where you've got a Cartan subalgebra with more than one element?
UM, for example.
SU3.
Okay. So
SU3. SU3.
Or I don't know. Suppose that you have a set of n qubits, right?
Yeah.
So and you take the set of all operators there. Okay, all the poly products.
Yeah.
All the diagonal ones are the Cartan subalgebra.
Okay.
Okay. All the rest of the operators can be written in this way. The raising and lowering operators. Okay. So, Cartel operators commute with each other, okay? And cartel operators with racing operators give something proportional to the racing operator. We know that JC commutating with J plus gives something proportional to J plus, and the same with J minus and so on, okay? But I don't want to make a big deal about this. It's just that, I mean, this writing things in this basis is going to be useful for the following results that we show. But yeah, I mean, this little example, I think, is pretty much clear. So what do these operators? Okay, yeah, there it is. So this little example, JZ, J plus, and J minus. Okay, J plus, J minus, I'm usually written this way, in operators, JX, and JY. And now there are weight states. Weight states are eigen states of the Cartan operators, of the diagonal basis. Okay, in the example I told you, what would be the states in the computational basis? In this case, for SU2, would be the eigen states of the JC operator. Okay? So we know that the raising and lowering operators take weight state into weight state. Right? I mean, if we are, I don't know, we are spin one. Okay, we take m equal to 1 component, I mean the largest one. If I apply j minus, I create m equal to 0. If I apply j minus again, I create m equal to minus 1. Okay? But these results are general for any semi-simple algebra. Okay? You have raising lowering operators, you have weight states into a weight state. Okay? And in particular, there is an important weight state, which is called the higher weight state. And the highest weight state is the weight state that is annihilated by any racing operator, okay? In the case of SU2, spin 1, let's say, you take m equal to 1, would be the highest weight state, because if I apply j plus to that one, I annihilate that state, okay? So, good, yeah, in SU2, if you are in a higher representation, spin j, m equal to j would be the highest weight state in that case for SU2, okay? Well, that's why I say SU2 is an important example. Keep in mind, because we pretty much know. Okay, so all this to show basically what the Junaid's coherent states are. So Junaid's coherent states are basically a displacement operator, and we say more than what this is, applied to that highest weight state. Okay, a displacement operator is a group operator induced by the algebra. It's just taking E and exponentiating some. It's a unitary operator basically induced by any element in the algebra. I mean, there is just an infinite manifold. All these parameters gamma j here are real, okay, and they are continuous. So when I apply to the highest weight state, they generate the whole orbit of general stochastic.
And you're expressing the sum and the exponent as the original generators and not the Cartan.
Okay, so yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the point is that all of my generators are arranged in this way.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I have this composition, I know. Good.
Question is, so H you've written here in the Cartan vial, you call it a basis. Is that really a basis for the whole algebra, or is that just a generating set?
It's a generating set. I mean, if you write it in this way, it's a generating set.
It is. What are you generating? I think I just don't understand the algebra well enough. I'll ask you later.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a basis, right?
But it's a basis for the algebra.
Yeah, it's a basis for
the algebra. You don't generate the algebra the way that you generate
there is a minimal set which generates the full algebra by commutation. And that is the set itself.
I think I'm thinking about associative algebras here and probably shouldn't be.
Well, sigma x, sigma z, for example, generates all three elements.
Yeah.
But three elements form the basis for the algebra is linear space.
Okay. Thank you. So, yeah, good. Okay. So, the unitary operators, as I said, or displacement operators, right? They are just unitaries induced by the algebra. So this is a generalization of the usual coherent states. You know, there is a displacement operator applied to some bucking state or lowest weight state or whatever highest weight state. But in finite dimensions, right? I mean, the displacement operator now is a group operation induced by the algebra, and the bucking state or whatever is the preferred initial state is a higher weight state. Okay? So question, I mean, suppose that we are in SU2 and we have a single qubit. We're in a spin one half representation. What are the generalized coherent states in that case?
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah.
So we are in the case of SP2, mm-hmm. and we're in SP1. Okay.
Yes, I should.
I should. But I mean, I think for those idea, right? I mean, if we're in SP1 half representation, we have a single keyword, okay? And we have the sigma z, sigma x, and sigma y. The highest weight state would be the zero state or state pointing up, and any displacement operator would be a rotation, right? So any pure state of a single cube is a generalized coherent state, okay? For a SP1 representation, that is not true anymore. The highest weight state will be the m equal 1 state, and now any like space rotation, three-dimensional space rotation of that state will be a generalized coherent state. But for example, the state m equal to 0 is not a generalized coherent state because I cannot create this state from this one by a rotation of this one. Okay? So, I mean, generalized coherent states are special states. I mean, depending on what the algebra is, could be a set of measures.
Sorry, I'm trying to picture that. That's not saying that the m equals 0 state cannot be, sorry, one of the generalized coherent states for spin 1 cannot have a component that's m equals 0. It's just that the m equals 0 state alone
yes.
does not lie on that.
Exactly. The eigenstate of JC, yeah, that's when I write the things in this way, these are eigenstates of JC.
So how do you avoid that? You're just generating rotations.
Yes.
You've got to bring that thing down through the axis.
Yes. So you can get superpositions that include m equals 0, you can't get a pure alone m equals 0 on that one.
Yeah. And the point is, again, I mean, this set of observables is not a basis of all the Hermitian operators in spin 1, right? I mean, these are 3 by 3 dimensional matrices, but you need tons, right? I mean, you need 8. Okay, so you need to go to SF3. So with operations there, so if I take now SF3, for example, okay, my algebra is SU3, and I ask what the generalized coherent states of SU3 in the spin 1 representation are. Any one state, any spin 1 state is a generalized coherent state of SU3. Because with any operation in SU3, I can take any, the state m equal 1 to anyone. Okay? So, yeah, I mean, the definition depends on what the algebra is. This, for each particular H, for each particular algebra, there is a particular orbit of generalized coherent states. Okay, so those are generalized coherent states. They have some fun properties. Like, for example, they are minimum subtlety states. If you compute this quantity here, this quantity is minimum. Okay? So take any pure state, okay? The minimum of this thing will be achieved if the state is a generalized coherent state. I don't want to prove this now. Another property is that if I make the sum of the operators in the algebra and in square, then they define a Casimir operator. That Casimir operator is something that convinces you anything. Okay? In this case, jx squared plus jy squared plus jz squared is j squared. We know that commutes with, right? I mean, with jx, jy, and jz. So, because of this, this quantity here is basically a constant. Okay? So generalized coherent state will minimize this quantity here, which is called a relative purity or relative to H, whatever. I mean, it's just, if you compute the sum of the expectation values of the operators in the algebra square, you maximize this quantity only if the state is a generalized coherent state. Otherwise, no, I mean, the quantity will work. It's always positive, of course, but, you know, it's not going to be the maximum. And to obtain, basically, I mean, to know what the maximum of the thing is very simple, because you just plug in the highest weight state and compute the expectation values of the algebra operators in the highest weights. Okay? In SU2, spin 1 would be 1, right? Expectation value of JC squared. Okay, so yeah, so this is simple enough to do. So those are some properties. So we said the purity or that sum of expectation squared is maximum for any generalized coherent state. yeah, so for example, suppose that now I give you infinite many copies of certain pure state, right? Psi. And then I ask you whether that state is a generalized coherent state of certain algebra or not. What you can do is to compute the expectation values of each operator, sum the squares of those things, and know if the purity is maximum. So if you obtain the purity in if you know the purity is maximum, then you know that the state is a generalized coherent state. Otherwise, it won't. So this is in the second problem. You can do in time that will depend on the dimension of the algebra, because you have to to measure only expectation values of operators, of the M operators in the algebra. Okay? So, another important property is that each generic coherent state of such an algebra is uniquely determined by the expectation of values of the observables in the algebra. Okay? So, for example, in the spin 1 case, suppose that you take the M equal to 1 state, right? I mean, I compute the expectation value of JC, gives me 1. JX gives me 0, JY gives me 0, but I know that will be the existence of JC because of the initial result. So I know that it's a generic coherent state. So I only need information about the things to determine whether the state is a generic coherent state or not. And knowing this, I will show that basically you can uniquely determine what the state is. Okay? And I will say what I mean. and there are some, this is equivalent to show that the, if you construct these vectors, which are in R to the n, n is the dimension of the algebra, these are extremal points, the different convex. Anyway, so, okay, so, I will, basically, this will be one of the first assumptions. So assume that psi is a generic coherent state of certain semi-simple in the algebra, H, O1, OL. No, that was the case. I will assume that I have infinite many copies of the state. Okay, I know that. So I won't deal with maximum likelihood estimation method. But this will be fine as long as the dimension of the algebra is small. Okay, because then I will only need polynomial. To have a certain precision at the end, I will only need a polynomial amount of copies of the state, but for now I will assume I have infinite. Okay? So, so assume that I give you, I prepare a state psi that is a generic coherent state of this algebra. Okay? You don't know what it is. You only know that it's a generic coherent state of the algebra. Okay? And now you start to do tomography and you basically estimate the expectation value of any of the observables in the algebra only. Okay? So in SU2, I need only to estimate 3 expectation values. So suppose I give you, I don't know, spin 100, okay, I tell you it's a generic coherent state of SU2. So you have to go to the lab and have very good estimates of JX, expectation value of JX, JY, and JC only, okay? And that will allow you to determine what the generic coherent state is in the following way. So you measure all these expectation values, okay? So you know that basically because it's a generic coherent state, there must be a unitary operation, which is a displacement operator applied to the highest weight state, should give you what psi is. Okay, because it's a generic, that the premise is that it's a generic coherent state. So basically, to reconstruct psi, what I mean by that is to reconstruct the unitary operation U that goes here, okay? Is to output a quantum circuit that applied to the highest weight state prepares such a state, okay? That is what I mean by tomography. Okay, so how to do this? You obtain all these XJ components, okay? And now what you do is you build the following Hamiltonian. It's minus the sum over j equal to 1 to m, m is again the dimension of the algebra, of xj, these are the expectation value of the operators, times the operators itself. Okay? So we know because of what I said before is that if I compute the expectation value of h in the state psi, okay, that I gave you, you don't know what it is, this thing will be the sum of minus xj squared, okay, because xj are just expectation values of definitions on psi. And that is basically the purity that I told you before that is maximized for generic coherent states. Okay? So the maximum, if I put a minus sign here, I will guarantee that the ground state of this Hamiltonian, okay, that I built, I know what the xj are, I know what lj's are, because I measure xj's. The ground state of this Hamiltonian will be the generic coherent state that I gave you. Okay? So now, basically, what you have to do is some classical computation to analyze what H is. Okay? So They analyze what H is and to find what the ground state is of H is. By diagonalizing H, I mean to find the unitary. Basically, that takes the matrix form of H into the diagonal one. And that unitary will be the one that applies the highest weight state, will prepare the generalized coherent state. Okay? Just simple. So I don't want to make too many tests. But the point is that so far, I mean, I haven't said anything how to diagonalize this Hamiltonian. This Hamiltonian is, again, a huge matrix. Right? Okay. This is just a huge matrix so far, right? It's a d times d-dimensional matrix. It lives in the whole of your space. Well, but now what I will do is to work in a smaller representation of the algebra and make the diagonalization a smaller representation, like that joint one. Okay? So that's, I don't know if you know that, but whenever you have a spin 100, I mean, maybe this for this is trivial. For some of you, this is trivial. If you have a spin 100, and now your Hamiltonian is lives in a C2, you don't have to diagonalize the Hamiltonian working hand by hand dimensional method. You just work with Pauli. Okay? So that's basically the idea of this result, which, you know, I mean, there are many more algebras than C2, so that's why it's important. So what you do is you need to find this, right? I mean, a unitary diagonalizes the Hamiltonian, and for that, what we do is we work in a smaller dimensional representation. The bars here are smaller dimensional representation than the joint one, and then I will find what the basically what the eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian are, and pretty much everything. I will find a unitary in a smaller representation that will give me the complete information of the unitary in the bigger representation. Okay, so that's just, and that's what we do. If the unitary that I found has this form, now here I put smaller dimensional matrices, the unitary in the bigger representation will be of this form. I just need to get rid of the bar. I go to the bigger representation because this affects the form. So, for a real algebra of m dimensional, okay, I tell you, look, I gave you many copies of this generalized coherent state, okay? You don't know what the generalized coherent state is, but you want to learn about it, you only need to measure expectation values of operators in the algebra. That will output a quantum circuit that prepares such state. Okay? In time, polynomial in the dimension of the algebra. And not in time polynomial in the dimension of the Hilbert space. So these results are important whenever the dimension of the Lie algebra is logarithmic in the dimension of the Hilbert space. Okay? So in those cases, I can do efficient tomography. I can output a quantum circuit that prepares the state that you gave me, okay? But of course, I mean, having a quantum circuit doesn't mean much so far because I want to predict something else. For example, I want to predict, I don't know, expectation values of correlations, of products of operators. Well, you can do that as well. Once you know what the quantum circuit is, okay? Let's see. Suppose I know already what U is because I measured expectation values of operators in the algebra. I did this diagonalization, smaller dimensional representations. I know what U is. Okay, now I ask you a question. What is, for example, can you predict what the expectation value of something like this is for that state? And yes, in polynomial time, you know, again, in the algebra. And yes, you can do that because this thing here is basically highest weight state, U dollar OJ, U, U dollar OK, U, highest weight, right? I mean, this is basically the state that you gain, okay? So what I have to do is to basically make this transformation here, u dollar of ju and u dollar of ku, and those transformations I can do it again by working in a smaller dimensional representation of the algebra. I don't have to go to the huge representation. I go to a joint one, for example, okay? So I don't know, in SU2, this could be a product of jx, jy. So I just work with Pauli operators to see what the transform operators look like here, okay? And that takes, again, time polynomial in the dimension of the algebra, not in the dimension of the Hilbert space. So basically, when I do these transformations, I will end up having a superposition of states, of operators in the representation, okay? In particular representation, then to go to the bigger one, I just get rid of the bars, okay? And now I will be able to compute things like that because we know that, for example, whenever I compute the expectation value of raising and lowering operators in the highest weight state, right, those things are zero. The only only expectation values that will survive in this product, sorry, in this product are only the expectation values, basically, of things that depend on the Cartan operators, because those are diagonal in the basis of weight space. Okay. And I mean, this is just algebra that will take, it's very simple to do, and will take some polynomial in the dimension of the algebra. Okay, so I guess I'm, so this, I have 2 more minutes. Okay, so this is, I mean, the point that I want to make here is that whenever you have a generalized continuous state of a Lie algebra whose dimension m, you only need information about the operators in the algebra, expectation values of operators in the algebra, to compute other properties of that state. Okay, so the complexity depends on the dimension of the algebra. It does not depend on the dimension of the Hilbert space, because it can always work in a smaller dimensional representation. Okay. So, well, I mean, yeah, maybe I should stop. Unless I have to move.
We could do this democratically. What does he want to talk about in 2 minutes?
Well, the other point that I wanted to make is that, in general, when we go to the lab, right, I mean, somebody, you know, is aiming, for example, to prepare some generalized continuous state, but you know that won't be the case. So basically, I mean, there is some mixed state that is prepared, and I wanted to point out that in this case, that by computing, suppose that instead of giving me that generalized coherent state, pure generalized coherent state, you gave me something that is close to that, and now I want to estimate what the fidelity of the state that you prepare is with respect to the one you wanted to prepare. You want to, you know, obtain, for example, lower bounds of such fidelity. Again, you can only need information about the expectation values of the observables in the algebra to obtain a lower bound to the fidelity of state generalized continuous state preparation. And it takes polynomial time. Okay? So yeah, maybe I shouldn't go much into this, but yeah, it's, you know, I mean, many experimental groups usually focus on computing what the fidelity of whatever, preparing an 8-ion state, you know, particular state is. Of course, they need exponential time to do that, but one can obtain pretty good lower bounds that take only polynomial time. And the case of generalized continuous states is pretty flexible.
So, maybe we should.
Yeah.
Do you know how the complexity of measuring this the generative of algebra grows with the size of system?
Well, it depends on what the algebra is. I'm assuming that measuring, you know, I can give examples. I mean, yeah, I mean, there is a complexity associated. I mean, well, what is the complexity basically of writing out the algebra? Okay.
Yeah,
you have to take that into account. But in the case, I'm assuming that it's not too complicated actually to measure the operators in the algebra. Okay, like in set of qubits, you know, there are many relevant algebras where these operators just Pauli products. You can do that, right?
Yeah, I mean.
So let me see if I have an example. Yeah, like for example, I mean, in suppose you know there is, I guess you know there is a model in the transfer still, right? I mean, there is, you know, you have a set of n qubits, and there is a coupling sigma n sigma s between nearest neighbor qubits, and then there is a standard magnetic field. Well, if you take these operators and start to commute, you'll see that these operators generate the SO to N algebra, which is polynomial in N, and not in the dimension of the Hilbert space. Okay? I'm measuring the things. I mean, it's pretty simple, right? I mean, we have to assume that it's pretty simple. So you need information about that.
Two short comments. So yeah. One is that those generalized coherent states are sometimes called Pierre Wurm of coherent states because of famous book of Pierre
Wurm. You're right, I should have said that.
Okay, yes. And second, okay, I like very much your idea to use them for tomography. I would like only to add that maybe strangely enough, it's also possible to use this idea of generalized coherent states to tackle problems of entanglement. Then you need to see that any pure state which is separable over n times k system is nothing else as a generalized coherent state for the composite group SUK times SUN. And now, what's nice in your approach, if you want to see for any state if it is belongs to this class of generalized coherent states or not, the same you can say about entanglement. The same is separable, yes. It belongs to this class of generalized coherent state, and if it does not,
yes. Yes. It is. Okay. So, in fact, we We have a definition of generalizing datum, but I don't know if you...
No, but it could be set as a measure of entanglement, so last the market was done by Florian Minter myself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I would be glad to see the reference. I mean, we... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we work on some sort of generalizing entanglement state. There is a notion of entanglement that depends on the action. It depends what the observer is, basically.
So here, group SUK times SUN is somehow distinguished, or for multi-party systems, you can have SUK times SUN, SUN, and so on.
Okay, so maybe we're related with that. Yeah, in our, okay, we can talk later on.
John, you want to? Just a very quick comment on that. One of the drawbacks is this only works for pure states, right? You can't tell the difference between an entangled state.
It's not going to be a pure state. Yes, you are.
He was mostly talking about compact groups, right? This property, delta function, is actually not seen simple as compact group. Do you have in mind like non-compact groups? Except
by it works for Heisenberg bias,
right? Heisenberg, except for this one.
No, I mean, but it would be nice to see what
it's a GL.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was just going to say, what if? Can you say anything if your observables don't close on in the algebra?
No. It can get very messy. In fact, I mean, this example, right? I mean, if I take another Pauli operator that is not in that set, it explodes.
It explodes, so that it's scaled down.
There is a connection with the group theoretical, the group topology.
Okay.
There is a set of papers.
I see. Okay.
7 years ago.
Okay.
Similar system. Very similar.
Okay.
And you can do also for non-compact groups, clearly. For non-compact groups, there is the situation which is really very unusual, that the measure, the left and the right measure, are not the same. The left invariant and the right invariant measure on the group are not the same. And then it comes out an orthogonality relation in which there is a very strange positive operator, which is called dimension, is kind of plays the role of the dimension of the representation.
So I see.
Okay, something very strange.
So, is it again the same that,
for example, if you want to make a joint estimation of squeezing a displacement, you get into this kind of strange groups that are not compact and
I see.
That is
okay.
Operator.
So, but, okay, what, maybe.
Please may I ask you, starting with the definition of the closed algebra, define your coordinate states, but once you have this commutation relation, one can define another structure, which although you have some important, let's say, special extremal states, the intelligent state or minimum uncertainty state in certain sense. And I just wonder, is there any relationship between this structure and the other one? Because for this intelligent state, you would in certain sense minimize in fact, the product of variances and the mean value of
function. Yeah, in this case, I don't know. I mean, that maybe related on so the question. In the other case, the minimum variance is a problem. In this case, it's just, I don't know.
Okay, so we need to do two things here. The second thing is we need to listen to Robin's announcements. And the first thing is we need to thank
Two very quick announcements before lunch. The first is, regrettably, our website has vanished. I believe the entire continent of Australia has vanished.
No, just my university. So if anybody's got any jobs going, I might be on the market.
So hopefully it's 2:30 in the morning right now in Australia. So hopefully once somebody wakes up over there, we'll get the website back up.
What sort of IT person is not at 2:30 in the morning?
I don't know. Second thing on the schedule, which unfortunately we can't see because the website's not up. This afternoon, in addition to two talks, we also have two discussion sessions, and these were among the highest voted ones so far during the workshop. please don't stop proposing and voting on sessions. I'm hoping that topics will come up during the workshop that will say, oh, that's something we should talk about. But this afternoon, at 3:15, Alexei is going to generally coordinate an hour-long discussion on something that comes right out of Orlando's talk, which is how to characterize large systems. Brainstorming, what can we do with lots and lots of qubits, for instance. We were going to ask anybody who wanted to give a very short, by which I mean 5 or less minutes, précis of some solution or idea they have in this problem, to comment on the website. Since the website is down, can anybody who would like to just briefly state a result or solution that they have, talk to Alexei in person, and he will write down your name on the inside of his head and call on you during the discussion, unless there's more than 12. And at 5 o'clock, our very own model that I don't know is going to lead a discussion or kick off a discussion on how to estimate quantum systems using adaptive or learning procedures. Of course, these should be taken as, you know, the seeds for discussion. We will go where we go. Unless there's any comments or questions on that, let's have a great lunch.